Something about you stumped him that night. That's why you're famous. That's why everybody knows your name. You're the boy who lived.
Greetings and well met, travelers. You have found your way to Dragonreel, a magical journey to the realm of fantasy movies.
Welcome back to the Dragonreel podcast. We're so glad you could join us for episode 30. We've made it 30 episodes.
Wow,
isn't this
30?
Great?
It's fantastic.
And tonight we'll be talking about Harry Potter and the Sorcerer's and or Philosopher's Stone. I'd make a pretty fair beater. I'm Chris. And here we have it in chair number two. She's a wizard with a wand. I shouldn't have said that. It's Sharon.
Oh, yes. You know, I think my wand would have, like, unicorn and Pegasus hairs and maybe a little bit of fur from a Labrador Retriever.
This is starting to sound less like a wand and more like a marital aid.
What?
So, Dermont?
Oh, my gosh.
Okay.
Introduce chair three.
Chair number three, he really wants you to see his golden snitch. It's Pete.
It's because it's really awesome.
Oh my god!
I'm really proud of it.
Oh,
I don't even.
Wow. Oh.
And four. Just this episode so far, it's in chair number four. Just play her a little bit of music, and she falls straight asleep. Oh, I shouldn't have told you that. It's Michelle Barrett Shea.
Yay!
I'm already sleeping.
Oh my gosh.
We shouldn't have started the show with the music.
Shouldn't have started with the snitch. Oh, well.
Wait, are you comparing Michelle to Fluffy?
I have two Fluffies right now.
Oh, wow.
So, Michelle, tell us a little bit about yourself and how you came to be on the show.
Well, I came to be on the show because I play Dungeons & Dragons with at least two of the people on the podcast.
Yay! That's us!
That's only because I'm geographically challenged.
Yeah. So not only do we love fantasy movies, but we love fantasy role-playing games too.
Yeah, I've been a big geek for a long time, ever since I was a kid.
And have you seen Harry Potter at least three times?
I have seen it every Thanksgiving for the last, like, 5 years.
Wow. Okay.
So it came out around Thanksgiving, right?
It did, and it has Thanksgiving themes, so we try to watch it around Thanksgiving, Halloween.
Okay.
Oh, that's a good point.
That makes sense. So this is from 2001. Yeah, heard it came out 16 November 2001.
Excellent.
And it was rated PG at the time. I don't know if really anything is that challenging for children to understand. It's kind of straightforward.
Well, maybe the stuff with Voldemort is a little scary
little kids. I guess there's a little bit of scary stuff. But let's talk about the plot. Pete, why don't you sum up?
It's quite simple. Well put upon orphan Harry finds out that he's a wizard. He takes off to the wizarding world and finds out that he's got a price tag on his head from a group known as the Death Eaters, led by he who should not be named, but we'll call him Voldemort.
Okay. Well, we don't actually hear the word Death Eaters in this either book or movie.
Hey, don't mess up.
Hey, regardless,
Pete's
I'm doing the summation here. You don't want to do the summation? You do the summation.
I thought that was very interesting.
And then we find out all these little quirks and interesting things about the wizarding world. And then, Gryffindor wins the House Cup. So there you go.
And Harry wins at Quidditch.
Mm. So, and Harry doesn't just win at Quidditch. He wins at life.
Does he?
And he gets friends.
So this movie starts out with a rather horrible life situation for Harry Potter.
Yeah, a boy, like, living under the stairs.
So it's, in fact, the way that they showed him living under the stairs in the movie was actually way more luxurious than I imagined it from reading the book.
So what are you saying? It was a bigger closet than what
you thought?
It
seemed like a bigger cupboard, and it seemed like he actually had personal possessions in there.
But it says in the book later on, when he moved his stuff, that he did it in, like, one trip.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's still a closet, but, you know, it's just more of a personal space. In fact, I think if I were a kid and I saw Harry Potter's under the stairs cupboard bedroom, I would want to live under the stairs in my house.
So clearly you would have been smoking long before it would have been legal to do so.
Maybe.
Yeah.
I wouldn't want to be treated like he was treated.
Wait a minute. When we were in college, didn't someone actually live under the stairs?
Yeah, we had somebody living under our stairs.
Yeah.
Wasn't there a movie called The People Under the Stairs?
Yeah, I actually saw that. That was really good. I mean, it was really bad.
Was that
really
like
good.
The person who lived under the stairs when you were in college?
He was nothing like those people.
Oh, thank goodness.
Gosh.
I mean, the only scary thing about the stairs was that he was locked in.
Yeah, he was locked in.
That's true, yeah.
I mean, I thought it was really cute. It was kind of like a bunk bed. He's got his own action figures. You know, he can have, you know, a good time playing by himself, but they locked it.
Yeah, there is that. Okay, so that does take away from the charm of the place.
And also sometimes the uncle suggests that there are times that his punishment is no food.
Yeah.
Just saying that.
So if what we see in the movie is his daily behavior for all of his 11 years, I don't see how he could be as well-adjusted as he is in the story. But, you know, hey, it's a kid's
Chris,
story,
you need
right?
to suspend your
I
disbelief,
need to suspend my disbelief,
you know?
Yeah.
You know, I think that's what makes Harry so charming is when he goes. Because it's one of those stories like Anne of Green Gables, or I don't know if our listeners have watched Anne of Green Gables, but or like Orphan Annie, like the story of someone that doesn't have parents and they have never been to like a major feast and they've never really gotten Christmas presents or birthday. I'm getting really sad here, you know. So when Hagrid buys him and give, you know, the birthday present, and when he gives him the cake, when they're on that little, when the family's on the island, that means a lot to Harry. Mm-hmm. Because he's never had that before.
I think one of the things that he manages to take away that a lot of people wouldn't is that there's high level of gratitude.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I think he's truly appreciative of having any attention.
Mm-hmm.
The fact that he's been bullied and told that he's, you know, not worth anything.
Yeah.
He's sort of second class citizen serving breakfast to everybody.
Yes. And not even thanked for it.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, it's a sad beginning.
So I think the more you think about his living situation, the sadder it is. So I think you have to stop thinking about the implications of it at a certain point.
Mm. Well, yeah, because this is fantasy. It's not...
Right. And so I think that's kind of... that kind of appeals to kids in a kind of Cinderella way. See, Cinderella had like a secret fairy godmother she didn't know about, and it turns out that somebody's actually looking out for her, and she doesn't really belong where she is. She belongs in another, you know, part of society, a different kind of world. And so that's kind of like the appeal.
Would you say that it was a whole new world, Chris?
It was a whole new world, a fresh, exciting point of view.
I think not only for kids, I like stories like this. They would be called like rags to riches stories, where you know the little boy or the little girl make good, like in The Little Princess.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's kind of like an opposite story because she had a lot and then she lost it all.
Yeah. So this is more of a when kids are mad at their parents, they wish they were adopted and that they were secretly an alien or a princess or a superhero.
Or a wizard.
Or all of the above.
And so here comes this wish fulfillment. You know, in the shape of Harry Potter, and I think that's the appeal of it initially.
It's your classic fairy tale,
right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
I mean, there's so many fairy tales, especially some of the grim ones, that have the sort of horrible, awful start, and yet the person's nice.
Yeah,
and it makes you wonder if Dumbledore sort of sent him there on purpose, so he wouldn't grow up famous and spoiled.
Oh,
and he knew that it wasn't going to be the easiest life, but.
Oh.
At least he wouldn't be this, oh, that's Harry Potter.
Well, I think he also knew that Harry would very successfully be under the radar in that situation as well. You know, there would be no reason for anybody to find a young infant to do him in if he's not part of their world anymore.
I think you're both right.
So kind of like the Star Wars idea of hiding in plain sight.
Yeah.
Well, hide him with muggles. Who's going to believe
gonna
that
love
he's
with
there?
Muggles, this mm-hmm. famous child. But I think Michelle has a point that Dumbledore might have done that purposely. And he does in the beginning that this is the only family that he has left.
Yeah. Here, I've got that clip right here.
Okay.
Do you really think it's safe leaving him with these people? I've watched them all day. They're the worst sort of muggles imaginable. They really are.
The only family he has.
Mm. Oh, Richard Harris, I miss you so much.
Right.
Oh.
I actually like Michael Gambon.
Michael Gambon. I like Michael Gambon also, but I got to tell you that for me, Richard Harris kind of brought forth the spirit of the
He's only in two movies,
I
right?
I thought so too.
Yeah, because he passed away after the second one.
Mm-hmm.
And he played
Arthur.
I recall
in the
in
second
Camelot.
Movie, and I think he looks very frail in the second movie. Like it's
yes.
not really Dumbledore. It's you know, it feels like they kind of
like,
propped him up.
It's like Peter O'Toole in Stardust.
Yeah, yeah.
You know.
Well, he didn't have a lot of demanding action parts there.
No, but he was dead. There was a good reason he was in bed.
Right. Right.
For that time, because that man looked sunken.
Yeah. Mm. But I thought he looked vigorous enough in this movie.
Yes.
I thought he was a good Dumbledore, but I don't know if I think that the other one, you know, I don't know if I think he's superior to the other Dumbledore.
Mm-hmm.
Played by Ian McKellen.
Who I also love.
You mean Gandalf?
Oh, right. Sorry. I'm mixing, crossing the streams.
The actress's name that plays McGonagall.
Maggie
Smith?
Smith. Dame
Maggie
Smith.
Smith.
Yeah. I love her, too.
Yeah, she's fantastic.
She's also in Downton Abbey. And, oh, my gosh. I love her in both. I know my husband has an opposite opinion, but...
So, like, the clip that I just played, I feel like she misread the line.
Well, you know, I beg to differ.
Well, you can beg all you want.
I think she's coming across... I think that the way she reads the character is that McGonagall's very terse and proper.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's why she delivered it the way that she did. Whereas the way in my head, when I read the book, didn't sound like that either.
Mm-hmm.
So I think the big thing is we got to separate the book thoughts from the movie thoughts so that we can give the movie a fair shake.
Mm-hmm.
Which was the biggest problem I had with this movie, quite frankly. I'm not going to lie.
You thought it was not enough like the book?
I thought it was not enough like the book.
Oh.
I thought the choices they made for the things to include weren't necessarily the best choices.
Really? Because my impression, I know there are some things that are different, but I thought that as books are translated into movies, sometimes they just take huge liberties, and I thought this one did a pretty good job. Like, for example, the scene at the train station, I thought in the book it was described very well, and I also thought that the movie, that was an important scene to put in there when they have to, when he sees the brothers of Ron going...
Fred and George.
Fred and George. Mm-hmm.
God, woman, how can you not tell us apart?
But it turns out they were just fooling with their mom anyway. He says something
merry pranksters that they are.
Oh my gosh, yeah, I love
they're already
characters.
Started in that life.
Yeah. So what, Pete, would you have added that was in the book and not in the movie? Or what would you have left out of the movie that was in the movie and the book? You know what I mean.
I know what you're trying to say.
Well, answer that instead of what I asked.
I guess I feel like there was a huge, and admittedly this was one of those things cut for time, it's kind of like not having Tom Bombadil in Lord of the Rings.
Uh-huh.
It feels very choppy to me between certain sections of the story. So library research for Nicholas Flamel.
Uh-huh.
It comes on way too quickly. The absence of Peeves the Poltergeist. Some of the characterizations that made Hogwarts more of a character
mm-hmm.
in the overall works were left out. The other thing that really kind of irked me was who are all these people at the teacher's table that we never get a proper introduction for, you know?
Yeah.
And you know, later they try to cover over with exposition some of the stuff that's been going on with their classes and things like that. And then there's the whole Mirror of Erised, and that jumps to another thing. I don't know. Just it seemed very... It didn't seem like a smooth narrative to me.
Okay.
And again, it's one of those things where this is a personal problem that I had with it, and it's because I couldn't separate the book from the movie. Hmm. But even looking at it a second time, realizing that I couldn't compare the two, I still felt like the narrative was very choppy. I felt like a lot of stuff was very rushed, and it didn't develop enough from what I would have liked to see.
Okay.
And so, where, you know, just to play counterpart to mm-hmm. Pete, I thought they put the best parts of the book into the movie, like the parts that would be visually stunning. And it's kind of weird that I'm saying this because I'm the blind
one.
Well,
I agree with you, except for
which
that
you?
Led with you, Sharon.
Oh, okay.
Except for that led to certain oddities, like the fact that Hogwarts apparently starts classes on August 2nd.
Oh, yeah. Good point.
Because it's Harry's birthday when Hagrid picks him up, and we know from multiple sources that Harry's birthday is July 31st. So Hagrid brought him to Diagon Alley the next day, August 1st, got all his stuff. The very next day, he puts him on the train. Or actually, was it even the same? No, it was the same day. So it's August 1st. He puts him on the train to Hogwarts. Mm. And then they arrive at the castle at night, August 1st. They get sorted. And then the next day, August 2nd, they start their classes.
They count for a Christmas break.
See, it just didn't. It just didn't bother me because, like, you know, a lot of the story, if you think about the book, he doesn't get to Hogwarts right away. There's a lot of stuff about the Dursleys, and then he gets all those letters, and it's just basically them, you know, chasing them down. And, you know, all those, I mean, there are a lot of funny scenes with letters arriving and the uncle nailing the mailbox shut and shoving stuff under the door. And there was a scene where they went driving and they were in a hotel, and that was not in the movie. But I didn't mind so much because there were a lot of parts in the book that I was like, okay, I get it. He doesn't, you know, want the letters. And... Mm-hmm. I actually felt that in the book she concentrated too much on that. Okay. So if I was an editor of the book, I would have said, absolutely, let's just get this kid. I mean, I liked some of it, but I just thought it went on far too long,
okay.
If that makes sense.
I mean, Hogwarts is the highlight, so I think they hit the cinematic highlights to get him there.
Yeah.
No, and I'm not arguing that point, and I honestly feel that the beginning of the movie was fairly strong. It's just that it's from that point on when they get to Hogwarts and things start to come at you at such a staccato pace, it's hard for you to appreciate Hogwarts as a character in the movie.
So, yeah, they played some things out and they had to make some shortcuts, and I get that that's uneven. I feel like Snape was not developed at all in this movie.
Seriously. And neither was Hermione for the most part. I mean, it goes right from why was she annoying to oh, we feel bad.
Right. And, well, Snape has, like, one interaction with Harry before, you know, he's got the cloak on. And that interaction is Snape actually being... So he's, like, saying, well, you weren't paying attention. What Harry has written down is notes on exactly what Snape was saying. Whereas in the book there was a little bit of plausibility of what Snape was accusing Harry of, but any idiot can look at the notes and say... He's not just doodling. He's writing down what I'm saying.
Right.
I don't need to make exceptions like
see,
that.
See, I like what they did with the character, and I thought they made it ambiguous whether he didn't... I mean, you could have... When you watch the movie twice, or
which
three times, or four times, you can understand it both ways. Because remember in the books that he is supposed to have... Really, you're not supposed to know which side Snape is on. And I think they do a good job of that you can tell he doesn't like Harry.
Now, you see, this is where I came into a big problem with it also, is the fact that when you watch it on the second viewing, because I honestly watched them within a day of each other.
Okay.
Both times, okay?
Okay.
And I made notes. So one of the biggest notes that I have is the fact that immediately Harry is playing the blame game with Snape. Snape is immediately the bad guy because he's the asshole professor.
Hmm. Well, he's head of Slytherin House, which is a rival.
But regardless, the thing is that he doesn't feel that way about Madame Hooch or, you know.
Wow, this could be a whole podcast by itself. It's the relationship between Harry and
Snape comes in barreling hard down on Harry. Harry's like, what's his problem? You know, and he gets embarrassed by it, and from that point on, Snape must be the bad guy.
Yeah.
Well, and that's why when he's at the game, Hermione assumes that he is the one that's spelling Harry.
Right, but only because Harry has come out and said that he must be the bad guy.
Yes, but...
So, but the point is that it's not based on anything. It's based on the fact that Harry doesn't like Snape.
Well, I guess because he yells at him in the class.
Regardless, I'm sure that there will be other teachers that yell at students in classes. Does that mean that they're secretly Death Eaters?
Well, I'm sure he heard stuff about Snape, and he sort of knows some of his background.
But that's not in the movie.
Again, no, it's not in the movie, but in the book...
But that's the whole point. We need to separate the book from the movie here. We can't make the comparison between the two because they're not the same thing.
Now, there's some looks back and forth that you're wondering, like, is there mutual dislike?
Mm-hmm. And invariably there is. I mean, obviously,
and there is, Snape, and you don't Snape learn comes that down until on, later.
Right, but again, it's in the movie, it pretty much out of the gate, Snape must be the villain.
Well, I agree, it's poorly developed, and that was one of I don't want to say peeves. I'll say peeves. That was one of my peeves in watching this movie.
Poor Rick Mail.
See, now again, I guess this is good, though, to have, you know, if we all agreed with each other, it would be a very boring
podcast. And that's the thing,
is
like, I had read the book before I saw this movie, and I thought the movie was a good adaptation when I saw it the first time. But having, you know, 15 years between then and now, or, well, 17 years between then and now, I've got, you know, the book long behind me. I didn't just read the book. And so when I'm watching the movie, I'm looking for the things that the movie is not telling me, and that was one of them.
So I just want to say, I do disagree with you, because I think that the situation with Snape, it's doing what other movies do. It's setting him up to be the bad guy, surprised at the end when he's not.
But it's so clunky in the way that it's doing it.
Yeah, the
book is my
definitely
problem.
Did it better.
It could have been a lot smoother.
But I wonder if Harry's reacting a little bit to, you know, he was bullied by the Dursleys, and the first interaction with Snape is him yelling at him. So he's like, oh, great, here's another person that's going to criticize me.
Okay.
But the flip side to that is, why does that make him the guy after the Philosopher's Stone?
Well, he's taking a leap.
You know? Exactly. That's my whole point.
The kids
really
do that a
developed.
Lot, though. You know, like, I mean, really, they do it throughout all of the books. They make these wild leaps.
And you would think that after the first time they were wrong, they would suddenly stop making these wild leaps, but...
Well, yeah, but also...
That's just not the way it seems to work.
They're also kids, so they're not... So that's why I can forgive a lot, because, you know, kids are very different from adults, where we can see the gray in things. Like, well, we might say, why? What's the motivation here? Why does Harry not like him? And, of course, we find out later. But for kids, and remember that little kids can see this movie, they kind of need things to be more...
I think the audience here isn't just for kids under the age of 10. I think the audience here is for kids who are preteen and early teen.
Yeah, but how do you make a movie for everybody? You know, that's the question, too.
Well, again, I'm not asking them to make a movie for everyone. I'm asking them to put in the effort a little bit more to understand why we don't like Snape.
Yeah.
Oh, see, I got it. So I just want to say, I hear you,
well,
too.
Well, you got it because, again, you're pulling from your pre-knowledge of the book.
See, but I don't think so. I think just from watching this movie, I know...
Okay,
I mean,
so what for you in this movie informs you that Snape must be the bad guy? That made you agree with Harry.
Well, Harry's a good guy.
Yeah, that
might. He said it.
And so one jerk teacher. So one jerk teacher yelled at him. So that makes that guy.
And he sides with Draco Malfoy.
Yeah, and that he's, you know, that we're told Slytherin is where all the bad folks come from. So,
but we find out later Hagrid comes from Slytherin. So
wow.
Apparently not all
Again,
the bad folks come
that's
from.
That's later though.
But the thing is that you can't. You know, to sit there and make these gross generalizations is unfair.
No, but he is a child. So meeting Draco and meeting Crabbe and Goyle, and oh gosh, they're horrible people.
Right, but and those are three out of the entirety of Slytherin House.
No, it's not fair to Slytherin. But
yeah, it's definitely not fair to Slytherin. Fair.
You know what's not fair? Also you know what's not fair to Slytherin? This movie.
Amen to that.
Well, they do take the cup away from them at the end, so you kind of...
Yes, exactly.
I actually do have, being a teacher, I had some sympathy for Slytherin House because they did win, and then they changed the point. So, but I'll tell you, we could do whole podcasts about any of these issues.
Which, by the way, is one of my favorite scenes when he awards Neville 5 points for standing up to his friends.
I think it was 10.
Was it 10? I thought it was 5.
Yeah.
I thought it put them in the lead by a point.
It put them over.
Yeah.
Yeah. Do you have that clip?
But,
it takes a great deal of bravery to stand up to your enemies, but a great deal more to stand up to your friends.
That is hands down my favorite quote in the entire movie.
Easy.
So you don't have the rest of it?
I don't have the point total. No, okay. I thought the point total was academic because, obviously it's rigged.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. I mean, the system, the whole point system is rigged for Gryffindor to win this movie.
But again, I think that's something for the kids. Because you don't, you know...
I agree. That is a kid thing. That is, the kids are like, yay, they got the points, they win.
Yeah. In the
Little
Mermaid.
Kids don't think, well, wait a minute. What is the system by which points are evaluated and awarded? They don't care.
No, they don't care.
But they don't have their spreadsheet out.
My favorite part about the points, though, is when Draco gets zinged for being out after hours, in spite of the fact that he...
Can we talk about that for a minute?
So, oh, gosh.
I got a couple things here, right? Okay? Here's a couple things. Here's what Dumbledore said in the beginning at dinner.
The first years, please note that the Dark Forest is strictly forbidden to all students.
All right. So you got that. Then they get in trouble for going to Hagrid at night.
They're out at night.
And McGonagall says this. Curse.
Nothing, I repeat, nothing gives a student the right to walk about the school at night.
What is their punishment?
To go into the Dark Forest.
To walk about the school at night in the Dark Forest, which is forbidden, alone, unchaperoned.
Okay.
No, they're not alone, unchaperoned. Hagrid's
with the dog.
There.
Hagrid's there, but they split up.
They split the party.
Never split the party.
That is my one problem with this movie. I mean, because I disagreed with both of you on the other points, but I, as a teacher, if the rule is no kids in the Dark Forest, well, wait a minute. Unless you're the group that just got in trouble, what? And so,
unless you're the group that just got in trouble, and it helps further our rapidly devolving plot.
But it's in the book too. But this is also in the book. That's their punishment.
No, it is. It is. It totally is.
So that's
also
not a
in the book. They actually
between...
wait several days to find out what their punishment is. Maybe even weeks. I can't even remember how long it took.
I did some research for this podcast. I went and asked some. I did. I went and asked some teenagers. I said, "Can you tell me what you think about that punishment?" And I brought up the whole point that we're making now. And they said to me, they said, it doesn't matter. It was still a punishment because it was scary and they didn't want to do it. And I said, but what is that teaching you? And they just said to me, as kids, they said, but the point is they did something wrong. They have to be punished.
Don't break the rules.
So see, there's a difference between...
Yeah, so they're not
between,
putting that together.
Yeah, there's a difference between adult brains and, you know, teenage brains of how they... think about...
I just wonder how Hagrid is still employed when he puts these children in danger constantly. And Hagrid breaks every rule the school has at one point.
Well, Dumbledore trusts Hagrid.
Hogwarts
implicitly.
Is just like a lawsuit factory.
Well, in a way, what's the little... Harry's foil in Slytherin. What's his name?
Malfoy.
Oh my gosh, I forgot the word Malfoy.
He works
you
with the Flash now.
Malfoy? How could that be?
I don't know, but, you know... He does have a point. Like, he says, you know, wait, students aren't allowed to go into the Dark Forest. Now, his motivation for saying that is because...
He's a coward.
He's scared. But he does try to point that out. So, it's like, for all you people in the audience who think that they're not supposed to go in there, well, really, Malfoy says it.
Mm-hmm.
So...
I mean, as a kid, I would have thought that was cool.
Yeah.
Send me to the forest.
I want to go into the forest.
Really, I get to go to the forbidden place with the largest human I've ever seen? Sure.
A quest. Give me a quest.
So I also thought, Pete, I don't mean to be your foil in this podcast, but I thought they did a really good job at introducing Hermione. I like Hermione as a character, and I thought they had her come up on the train, and there were several scenes where, like, even when Harry was getting yelled at, even just her raising her hand, like, you get
which makes her an insufferable know-it-all through most of the beginning of the movie.
See, I do that all the time. Wait a minute. Maybe,
no, you don't.
Maybe that's no, why don't. People
you
don't
see, there's
like
a big
me.
Difference. Okay. You're a diva. Yes. Hermione's an annoying know-it-all.
Oh.
There's a certain charm to it. The fact that you can be self-deprecating and things like that. That's okay. What makes it appealing for you to have the know-it-all switch to it. But with her, she's just an annoying know-it-all. And when they call her on it, she passed Ron and Harry, and then Ron and Harry give each other the look that says, oh, we're such dicks. Oh. We need to make this up to her. Oh. And then suddenly they're bestest friends.
Well, I don't know.
Well, she shows a human side.
Yeah.
I think they feel, they kind of understand, you know, here she is. She's a, you know, mudblood.
An insufferable know-it-all?
Yeah, and she's an insufferable know-it-all.
But I think she's trying so hard because she's not from a wizardy
yeah,
family.
Yeah, she's trying harder.
You know, I always thought she was endearing.
So Harry, who's been raised as a muggle his whole life, isn't trying as hard because why? He's famous?
Because he doesn't know anything about wizarding yet.
Well, the only reason why Hermione did was because apparently she got the letter sooner and was able to read the books sooner.
No, I think... well, see, that's the part that we don't understand, because...
See, that's... But again, the fact that that's a gray area is
yeah.
kind of bad to the...
Well, he has some natural talent, but he has no training at all. He doesn't know anything about the Wizarding World.
Right.
And he doesn't...
And she didn't either up until the point where she was given the acceptance letter.
But she does...
And she's able to buy the books.
She does sit and read a lot. Like, you know, you see her studying, and I think, you know, sometimes Harry is out and about doing other things.
Like
boy things.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, boy things.
Yes.
Well, I also wonder if her parents supported her.
That's why he wished to grab the Golden Snitch himself.
That's a good question, Michelle.
If Hermione's parents, yeah. you know, encouraged her to go study it all and get ready for it, and
again,
this is all new to you.
So we don't know.
But I'm assuming that there's some reason that she got all excited and studied it. Now, it might just
be
her personality.
Because her parents are orthodontists, that's why.
We don't know how the wizarding world interacts with people who have no connection to magic at all.
No connection? I think they don't interact.
Well, no, they must, because Hermione's family had no connection to magic at all.
Right, exactly.
They had no connection to the wizarding world.
Rare...
Right.
It's like, it's in Argus Filch, it's like the complete, or Aunt Petunia's the complete opposite of that. She's born to a magic family, but she got no talent.
Right. So we don't really get to see how that works. And I think the wizarding world, I mean, okay, let's talk about Hogwarts, right? When these kids get out of the school, what do they know about history? What do they know about arithmetic? What do they know about grammar and syntax? Nothing. All they know is how to make potions and animate the dead.
Wait, what?
I made that part up.
I think they get a basic education. You just
don't
see much of that.
They don't get a basic education. All they get is magic.
No, because they can already... read. So if you think about it, an 11-year-old...
They don't get chemistry. You confront them with, like, you know...
They do get chemistry. They have herbalism in their classes.
And they have potions, which Snape refers to as a science.
Exactly.
They have potions.
They don't have chemistry. They don't have biology lessons.
But that's the wizarding version of that.
Yeah, it is.
Herbology is the wizarding version of botany. You know, there are analogs.
I think Pete and I are agreeing.
No, wow. I agree that those are analogs, but mm-hmm. when they get out of school, they must confine themselves to the wizarding world because they are completely unprepared for the mundane world.
But wait a minute, it's like a specialty school, Chris. If you go to culinary school, you're planning on becoming a chef. You
yes, but if
go
I go to
culinary
school, I've already gone through high school.
Well, they might have already gone through some of the basic stuff before they get there.
We have to make that up to believe it.
The other thing, though, is that, you know, like, I have a friend who whose daughter recently got accepted into a ballet academy. So she's not going to get a proper thing. Like, if you went to the high school for the arts, you wouldn't be getting all of the other things as well, because you're going into a very specialized field.
I don't believe that's true, because in order to be accredited, these high schools for the arts have to have a basic curriculum in addition to the arts curriculum. You have to have a certain amount of math instruction. You have to have a certain amount of science instruction.
Yeah, but, you know, you also look at certain other, like, charter schools and things like that, and admittedly they have portfolios and whatnot, but it doesn't necessarily mean that you have to show a Regents-level mastery of anything.
Well, fine, but I think that, you know, being completely unprepared for the mundane world is why Voldemort loses. Because he's killed...
Oh, my God! Look. How did you get there?
Okay, I'll tell you how I got there.
You know why? Because the man never invested. He never invested.
But listen to this scenario.
He skipped out of algebra.
Okay, I'm Voldemort. I've just killed Harry's mom. I've just killed Harry's dad. This baby is sitting in front of me. What am I going to do? Why do I have to use magic? Why don't I just pick him up and throw him down the fucking stairs?
You just made this podcast explicit.
I already said asshole, so it was already explicit.
Okay.
Oh my God.
Voldemort loses because he doesn't understand basic biology. He could kick this baby in the teeth.
This baby is completely undefended,
and he loses because he has to use magic.
This is not the point. He doesn't have to use magic. He wants to because it makes him feel good. Magic is his drug. Which, if you look at it, you really look at the backstory, it's the story of an addict.
He's addicted to power.
Now you're bringing in completely.
And you know what?
You need to write that up as a term paper.
We don't live in a magic universe. The first thing you would want to do is use magic. You would not think of doing somebody in a physical way.
They're on the second floor. Throw the baby out the window.
No, you wouldn't think of that. You would do it the magical way, because we're not wizards. It's hard for us.
That is why you fail.
No, it's hard for us. So I'm a kindergarten teacher. I can put myself into a magical universe. The children have already learned basic math, and
I've known a few people to put themselves into magical universes.
I think you're picking at straws. Like, this is a very powerful universe that's filled with detail, and I think she's a brilliant writer to create all the stuff. And the background.
And I don't think we're arguing that point, but I think Chris does make a very valid point, which is that Voldemort could have picked a much easier way to get rid of Harry, and he decided to be all arrogant and junk and decide to put the mojo on him instead.
Not only put the mojo, but the most powerful and deadly spell he knows on the most undefended, you know, helpless person he knows.
Which I think is just, you know, J.K. Rowling's way of showing, of showing that he's just that
arrogant. He's powerful, and that's just how he does things.
And I think,
he could have just thrown him out the window.
Again, it's one of those things where, because we know the books, in the books we also know that he starts to depend very heavily on magic once he goes to Hogwarts. Mm-hmm.
And we don't know. Maybe at one point somebody says that they threw somebody out a window. I think it might have been Neville, and he bounced. So you're saying that he could have maybe killed him.
The devil's a bouncing baby boy.
He might have.
Don't you know about Bumbles?
He might have survived that, too. So, you know, we might be answering our own question.
Maybe.
He might have bounced. He might have, you know, he might have been protected from a physical attack as well. So there.
I don't know.
Maybe that's why Voldemort used his most powerful spell.
Maybe the ground around the Potter residence or the place they were hiding is made of Nerf. So it wouldn't have helped.
So I have another question.
There's a lot of bushes.
Michelle, who is your favorite character in this movie? In book one and movie one?
Well, it's funny. I started out liking Harry the best, and then later I ended up liking Hermione better.
Oh, why is that?
Well, I see a little bit of her in me.
Okay,
so
okay.
I was the straight-A student.
Raising your hand, not getting picked.
Yeah.
Yeah. Good.
I was a little quieter and not quite the telling everybody what to do.
Wow. And Pete, what about you? Your favorite character?
My favorite character from the movie is Hagrid.
Oh.
My favorite character from the book is Dumbledore.
Oh, okay.
And one of the reasons why, in particular, in the book, is because of the woolen socks moment.
Mm-hmm. Oh, wait, who
is
wears...
Is that the first book?
Yes.
Okay.
When he looks into... When Harry asks him, sir, what do you see when you look into the mirror of Erised? And he says, I see myself holding a pair of woolen socks.
Huh.
One can never have too many socks, Harry.
Wow.
Well, what about you, Sharon? Who's your favorite character in book and movie?
Oh, gosh. Let me think, and we're going to ask Chris that question.
As we all know, Umbridge is her favorite later on.
Right.
No. It's very hard for me to watch those scenes as
How
a teacher.
How can you not love Force Umbridge?
We'll get to that one in five more Harry Potter movies.
Ask Chris and come back to me, but ask Chris.
So, Hagrid in both. And Harry is probably more of a character in the book than he is in the movie, because in the book... Well, in the movie, he is like the reader's avatar, and like everything that is explained to Harry is actually being explained to Harry because it's being explained to the reader.
He's our Greek chorus.
Right. He's our point of view. Harry is us in the book. The problem with that is when you put it on a screen, Harry has a separate being that is not us, and as a result, the person that we are, or the people giving Harry information, results in just Harry doing nothing but absorbing information, looking around and looking amazed through the whole movie.
But I do think he's sort of us in the movie. Like, you're seeing the Wizarding World and everything for the first time.
Right. Since it's all first time for Harry, he just looks amazed a lot and doesn't really have a lot of personality.
I mean, that would be my reaction. Like, oh my gosh.
Okay, I've got my character.
Via the books, we know some of what is going on in Harry's mind.
Mm-hmm.
But we don't in the movie as much. And that's not... I mean, I think Daniel Radcliffe does a bang-up job of looking absolutely gobsmacked by everything magical.
No, I don't have a problem with his acting. I think it's the portrayal.
But the writing is terrible.
Yeah.
All right, I got my favorite character.
Who is it, Sharon?
Go.
All right. So... In the book, Harry, because he's Harry, and because I love him, and
I think his
spirit is just, he's so brave, and I'm just a very big fan of bravery, and especially everything that happened to him in his childhood, and he could have picked Gryffindor or Slytherin, and he says, when the sorting hat is put on his head, you know, please.
Difficult, very difficult. Plenty of courage, I see. Not a bad mind either. There's talent, oh yes, and a thirst to prove yourself.
I think it's that thirst, that drive that he has. I'm very attracted to that. In people.
So the hat tells us that those are the traits of Harry. Do we see them all?
No.
You see some of them.
I
think you see some of them. I think you see some. I don't think you really see the thirst to prove yourself.
No. To me, I do.
You see him wanting to make friends, but I don't know necessarily, I got to get great grades.
Mm-hmm.
Even necessarily on the Quidditch pitch either. You know, I mean, he tries. But I don't think it's not like he puts an extra time on the broom, so he can be a really grade seeker.
Oh my gosh, Chris, you have to play the broom.
Okay.
There's
a dirty side to Harry Potter.
No, just...
Yeah, here it is. Here's the dirty side to Harry Potter.
I want you to mount it and grip it tight. You don't want to be sliding off the end.
Words to live
by. Yes.
Oh my gosh. They're talking about the brooms. I don't know why.
Kids are not going to get that.
They're not going to get this one either.
Oh my gosh.
Don't forget the nice wrist movement we've been practicing.
Oh, yes. Yes, because when you're handling you want to make sure
swish, isn't it? Swish and flick.
Yes, you want to
swish and
you want to do a good swish and flick.
Oh, do you have the Leviosa comment by Hermione?
Wingardium Leviosa. Stop. You're going to take someone's eye out. Besides, you're saying it wrong. It's Leviosa, not Leviosa.
I love that line. Even like, how many years has it been? 17 years?
Yeah.
See, now to me, you know, like, and... I just love Hermione, too. Like, I can completely get what Michelle was saying. And Pete, would you say that she becomes a diva later on?
No, this is the first full-on diva moment.
Okay. I just...
And it's, it's not even a diva moment. The problem is that she's still an annoying know-it-all.
See, I
can see her being a future professor or a mom.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah, a professor.
And she's going to be a total helicopter mom, too. That's the problem.
Oh, my God. You know, here are four people, and we have different opinions. So yeah. This is good. This is the conversation that we want to have.
So, Michelle, was there a part in the book that you felt was left out?
I mean, nothing major, and I think I sort of give it some leeway because it is a film.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Although, having read the book, you do sort of bring some of that to the film.
Yeah.
Well, so it's not like you need a secret dictionary or anything, but you do know there's more to the story.
Mm-hmm. Is there anybody who just watches the movies and hasn't read the books? I mean,
I'm sure there's some.
I
actually know a couple of people.
Okay. I'm sure there are, and they would.
And do they think, know what's going on? You know, that kind of.
I would think so.
I mean, they get the general gist, but okay. So, I went back to special ed this past spring after a long absence, and two of the teachers with whom I worked are younger than I am, one of whom considerably. And the younger of the two, we were discussing Harry Potter as a possible thing to read aloud to the kids. And the younger of the two said, you know, I never understood those movies.
Okay.
And I said, why not? And so we sat down and we talked about it for a while. And that I think may have been in the back of my mind when I sat down to watch it the second time, because I realized, there are some moments here that probably could use some explaining.
Was it a girl, Pete? Was it a girl teacher?
No, it was in...
Really?
They were both male, yeah.
Oh, okay. I was going to say, yeah. I think that person, like, put the eye on you, and it's like...
Yeah. No. It was funny because the older of the two, he and I had to talk about Lord of the Rings weeks prior to this discussion about Harry Potter, and he had said that he never saw the movies because he didn't see the point, since he'd read the books, and the books were so much more complete than the movies could ever be. Mm-hmm. And he so much preferred what was going on in his headspace than what could be on a big screen.
Well, and that's a very interesting point, because I truly believe that you can imagine more in your mind than what you can see on a screen. And as a blind person, I was asking Chris, how did the special effects work in this movie? So I'm going to ask everybody that question. Is, like, for example, Fluffy. Does Fluffy look realistic? Does the centaurs look realistic in the dark forest?
Good. Yeah, the centaurs look good. The Quidditch is believable.
Okay.
Fluffy.
The troll also are kind of eh.
You know, I thought the troll was actually the best of the CGI.
I thought the troll was pretty good.
Oh, I thought the chess was the best of the CGI.
The what? Oh, the chess.
The chess game?
Mm. The giant chess, yeah.
Was that CG?
I thought it was.
I imagine so.
I thought most of it was practical.
Practical?
Yeah.
No, I don't think so.
Okay. I will have to look at the making of if... Oh, right, when they moved. I don't know.
Yes.
I don't know. Some of them seem to move, like, animatronically rather than...
I mean, I think it was meant to be a board game sort of thing.
I think
thing.
They were supposed to be stiff, yeah.
Yeah, they're supposed to be stiff.
So, okay,
yeah, kind
the
of
part,
statue-like.
The attacking
yeah.
part of the one that had the sword and slashed into another thing, I thought, that okay, that had to be CG, and that did look pretty good.
Mm-hmm. Okay, all right.
But, yeah, I mean, I thought the troll in the basement was, other than that, the best. I mean, it looked goofy, but it was supposed to look goofy, so...
I love the music
but
from
I
this
don't,
movie.
Oh, the music is the best part of the whole
movie. The music is the best part of the movie.
Yeah, the music's great.
Wow,
but
wow.
I would,
okay, so everybody so agrees on that? We all
yeah,
agree?
I like the music.
Oh, easily.
Okay. But yeah. I would definitely recommend, if somebody hasn't seen it, to read the book first.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yes.
With the music playing.
Now, what do you guys think? I'm asking all the questions here, but casting. I thought Alan Rickman was... Like, you couldn't have picked a better Snape, I thought.
One of the nice things about Rickman is the way that he can bring sinister with just a slight variation of his eyes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
He can turn from being an arrogant screw to being probably the most dangerous person in the room.
And I'm sure
just by closing his lids like an eighth of an inch.
I bet little kids are scared of Snape.
Oh, I'm sure they were terrified of
him.
Well,
he brings both the voice and the facial expressions. Yeah. Now, you can't see the facial expressions, Sharon, but they're very subtle, but they're very powerful.
And his sneer is wonderful.
I can hear it in the voice. So I'm not surprised God, when you guys tell me this. I'm just not surprised because.
So I thought Hagrid, Robbie Coltrane as Hagrid, was the best casting choice. I think he just like dead on perfect from the book.
Yeah, he's great. He's fantastic.
But I think overall, I thought they did a bang up job casting. And like I said, I'm a huge fan of Richard Harris, so that I thought they did a great job with him.
Okay.
Me too.
Michelle?
I mean, I don't think there was anybody that I would say was miscast.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, everybody was believable, even the kids.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know where they found a guy with a face on the back of his head.
Wow.
You know, Ian Hart used to be walking around like that for a while.
Like, yo, Professor Quirrell, the back of your head is ridiculous.
It's ridiculous.
Why you got to be so mean to him?
Oh.
Why you got to be mean? Some people, you know, some people swallow
just because he wears a turban.
You know what surprised me, everybody, was that these kids were so little when they started. And Neville, I love Neville's character and the development from
I felt that that Neville was one of those whose development got sidetracked by the big set pieces in the movie.
I concur wholeheartedly.
But he still has the parts where he tries to stop them.
Right, especially these days he has the parts, if you know what I mean.
No, I don't know
so
what you mean.
So apparently
he has his heroic moments.
Oh, he's pretty hot now apparently.
Oh, okay. Well, I just thought, these kids were, like, so tiny.
They were, and kind of doughy-faced, goofy little 11-year-olds.
Yeah.
And that's great. That's perfect. And I think that, I don't think there was a real acting problem in there.
No, the acting was great.
Especially Seamus.
You gotta figure they're very mature for their ages.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. And, I mean, not that she...
I liked Seamus.
Not that she was in this movie, but later on, if Luna would have been in this movie, I also love Luna.
She doesn't show up until like 5. I don't think she's ever mentioned. Maybe she's a transfer.
She's not a transfer. She just shows up later.
Yeah.
Because she's in Ravenclaw or something.
Yeah.
But later on.
She's just one of those people you just didn't notice for 5 years.
If we.
I like Lee Jordan in this one, too.
Yeah.
It's a big school.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, you know, we have to invite someone on the show when we talk about whichever one Luna appears in
first, yeah, okay.
Because she would kill us if we didn't invite
this
her.
This would be Amelia?
Actually, no. It's
Michelle's niece.
Michelle's niece.
Yeah, Caitlin is a huge Luna fan. She dresses up.
Why wouldn't you be? She's awesome.
As Luna awesome. For Halloween. And
Luna's a great character. That,
spectacular.
So we all agree on that, too. Wonderful. Yes. So,
but she's not in this movie, so it doesn't really count, does it?
Yeah, you specifically said this movie, so.
Yeah.
Right, yes.
So, how did it do as a movie? Did it convey the story it was trying to tell? I mean, let's divorce it from the book and say, did this movie itself tell a coherent story?
Barely. I think as an origin story, yeah.
Okay.
I thought so.
I thought it was adequate.
I thought it pulled it off, it just didn't do it spectacularly.
Right. Yeah, the Neville parts I thought that were in the book were kind of missing because at the end when he stands up to them, it's not really that much of standing up to his friends because he hasn't had any interaction with them in the whole movie.
He has, though. He met them on the train.
He did not meet them on the train.
He met Hermione.
Didn't they come into the train?
We only know that Hermione knew that he existed because she said, some boy has lost his frog or his toad. No. And then at the end, when they're all gathered together, ready to go in and get sorted, he finds his frog. There's Neville, but he doesn't interact with Harry and Ron and Hermione.
Okay, all right. Okay.
When he gets sorted into Gryffindor, he sits down next to them, but he doesn't interact with them as far as we see.
I think that you know they're in the same house.
No,
they can't
I get
show...
it. That's something you have to shortcut. But again,
it's one of those things where if it was a better executed script, you would have seen Neville interact with them more.
Oh.
That's just what I'm saying.
And that was the problem that I had. Yeah, exactly. Neville's friendship with them was important so that he could have that moment at the end where he's not just, you know, some kid who barely knows them standing up to them. He's their friend.
I'd have to watch it again. Mm-hmm. If you're saying specifically like lines that he says to them, I'd have to watch it again and look for that.
I don't think we're harping on specific lines that he says to them. I think we're harping on the fact that he doesn't get the exposure that is due him if he is one of their friends.
Mm-hmm. I mean, he was left out of part of it.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, you see, who are the two who bunk with Ron and Harry? Seamus and...
I don't recall. Oh, but you know what? Neville, in the book, goes into the forest with them. Ron's right. Not there.
In the book.
In the book.
So, but it doesn't show up in the movie. So mm-hmm. That's why...
Yeah, well...
Plus, he gets more screen time in both parts of 8. So.
Yes.
Oh, he gets lots of screen time later.
Yeah, yes. He definitely gets his due, but I wish he'd gotten more now. In this one.
Me too, because I feel like again, he's a character who's rushed later.
Mm-hmm. And he's like the second most important person in the universe.
Right, exactly.
But that's getting ahead of ourselves. You know what? We have talked about this a lot.
You might say we put in over an hour on this.
Yeah, you might. So I'm going to ask us to rate this movie. I'm going to, you know, guests first. Michelle, on a scale of 1 to 5 gold pieces, how do you rate Harry Potter and the Sorcerer's and or Philosopher's Stone?
So I give it 4 gold pieces and probably about 2 silver pieces.
Wow, okay.
I mean, I think because it is sort of the origin story, it shows you the wonders of the wizarding world. And there's a good thing about being first. You know, the first movie is kind of the one you remember. It starts the whole series off. If it had flopped, mm-hmm. you wouldn't have gotten any more of them.
Oh, good mm-hmm. point.
Absolutely.
Lovely point.
All right, Sharon, on a scale of 1 to 5 gold pieces, how do you rate Harry Potter and the Sorcerer's and or Philosopher's Stone?
I'm always the person that rates it higher than everybody else, and I am not going to let down my following, because...
Both of them?
Go for it, Sharon.
All 2 of them that follow me? I'm just... this is my opinion, and you can agree with me or disagree with me, but if you disagree with me, you're wrong. I'm going to rate this movie 5 gold pieces.
Oh my God, as good as Excalibur and Princess Bride?
Yes, for me. Because
are you on pain medicine right now?
No, I'm not. I love this movie. I do.
It's highly caffeinated.
I love it. For a blind person, also, it's a good movie. They talk during the movie. I can understand what's going on. I think it's an origin story, and that's how I specifically look at this movie. And for me personally, it hit all the high points. And often I'm the person that will say, oh, but this movie is not like the book. But... you know, like, for example, Anne with an E, to me, is nothing like the original Anne of Green Gables. But that's a different podcast, too. So, for me, it hit all the high notes. I loved the acting. I thought it was cast, you know, very well. And I will watch this movie over and over again, like I watch Princess Bride over and over again. And I will watch it with friends and relatives and future kids, and that's my summary. So
it's
Chris,
really good around the holidays.
So Chris, based on a scale from 1 to 5 gold pieces.
Yeah.
I totally stole that from Sharon, by the way.
My mouth was even open and moving, by the way.
How would you rate Harry Potter and the Sorcerer / Philosopher's Stone?
I am going to say it is a solid 3 gold pieces and 1 silver.
Oh, my goodness!
And that is because there are just a lot of shortcuts that are made. There are a lot of...
you cynic!
So I think it absolutely beautifully realizes the world that is described in the book. And I think that's fantastic.
Did you give it
fantastic.
3 gold pieces only?
He's a harsh critic.
I don't think it's the best of the series. I don't think it's the best of the series. I think the story here is kind of weak. Once you get Harry into the school, the mystery and the resolution that happens, this, you know, it's not my favorite book either. So it's, you know, in the series. So I'm gonna say it's a great adaptation of the book. I'm going to say that it left out some fairly important pieces in favor of the set pieces that it gave us, but I think it did it adequately, and that's why it gets my 3 gold pieces and 1 silver.
Oh, you are just a very
harsh. Yeah, I'd have to agree it's not the best of the books, but it still's the first.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And Pete, how do you rate the Sorcerer's Philosopher's Stone? I don't know what I'm trying to say.
Okay, I'm going to start off giving it 3 gold pieces, then I'm going to deduct 5 gold pieces for the fact that they felt the need to marketing it to an American audience, change the name from Philosopher's Stone to Sorcerer's Stone.
Wow.
Then I'm going to give it back 3 silver pieces because...
I kind of see where you're going with.
Because Michelle convinced me that since this was the first, it had nowhere to go but up. And it is, in fact, a fairly decent origin story. There is in Hollywood, a big problem that a lot of people face when they try to adapt a book to a movie, and that is what I call the abundance of awesome. There are so many good things, you have to decide what you're going to keep in the hopes that you can do a consistent and engaging narrative. And I don't think they fully succeeded with this, but I don't think J.K. Rowling fully succeeded with the book either. Mm. So I think that overall, I'm going to give it a 2.8.
Oh.
All right.
Oh my
low man.
God.
He low
oh,
man.
I'm actually having pain in my chest.
Feel it, baby. Feel that pain. Yes.
Oh.
All right.
Wow.
All right. Well, that puts a ribbon on Harry Potter and the Philosopher's Stone.
And I think if people want to comment,
Harry Potter and the Velociraptor Stone,
they should, and they should write us notes about who they agree with. And guys, come on, you have to write notes that you agree with me and Michelle, because these guys do not know what they're talking about.
Clearly.
Please, write in.
All those years taking movie theory and literature have been wasted on me.
I want to hear what you guys think.
I'm like Harry in Potions class.
Yeah. Yeah, you're just not paying attention by taking notes on everything.
Attention. I'm just taking notes on everything. I'm not really. I'm hearing him, but I'm not listening.
Right.
Who is picking the next movie?
I'm picking the next movie.
And what is the next movie going to be?
All right, Sharon. Should we go back to the '80s again, or should we go forward to the 2010s?
It's your pick.
It's
love
your
of
call,
my life.
Boy.
So
make
please.
It your
so
call.
We are really '80s heavy. So I'm going to go forward.
Please.
And
nice.
We are going to do Prince of Persia.
Oh, hooray!
Prince of Persia. I don't even know what that is, so I'll have to watch it.
Oh, it's so much cheese you could put it on your nachos.
Oh,
yes.
it's
decent. I mean, it's got its issues, and we'll talk about those. So thanks for sticking with us. I hope you enjoyed the show, and I hope you have an opinion that you want to tell us. You can find our contact information in the credits at the end of this episode, and please go to iTunes and give us a review because it helps other people find us.
Yes, please.
And we want other people to find us. Don't keep us to yourself. Share all of the links that we send out. We want you to share them with everybody that you know, and if they tell you to stop, you tell them, you know what, you don't own me. You don't run my life. I am an individual.
You're not even my real...
You're not my real dad.
You're not even my real mother.
Right.
Just a good way to start a conversation.
It's a great way to start a conversation. And in fact, if you don't even know a person on the bus, you can just like take the earbuds out of your ears and go, have you heard the latest Dragon Reel? Oh, you should. And you can
you
share.
Really should.
Because we release our episodes in mono, so you can each have an ear. And you know what? You may find your soulmate in this way. And I think...
Oh, watching fantasy movies?
Watching fantasy movies. And if you don't do this, and you end up... dying alone.
Watch
insane.
Excalibur.
You've only got yourself to blame.
Don't listen
it's true.
To Chris.
It's true.
Watch Excalibur.
You don't have to push. You don't have to push gold, honey. Don't worry.
You'll find your mate if you watch Excalibur.
Yeah, I don't know if I put it on my dating profile.
All right.
Or
so thanks,
Harry
Michelle,
Potter.
For joining us. It was
Thank
great to
you,
have
Michelle.
You here.
Michelle, we love you.
Well, thanks for inviting me.
Thank you, Michelle. I haven't met you, but I'm really happy that we had this time together.
We shared a moment.
It's just
you shared a moment.
Sharon gets to love you, and I can only say that. Come on.
Oh my gosh.
All right, and join us next time for Prince of Persia. And until then, keep it real. Thanks for staying with us to the end of the episode. If you enjoyed this show, please go to iTunes and or Stitcher and give us a good review. That'll let us know what you think and also help other people find the show. Dragon Reel would love to hear from our listeners. You can email us at dragonreelpodcast@gmail.com and follow us on Facebook at facebook.com/dragonreel. And join us on Twitter at twitter.com/dragonreel. If you want to comment directly on any episode of Dragon Reel, go over to our website, dragonreel.com, and leave us a comment. You can also give your rating of the movie yourself on our scale of 1 to 5 gold pieces. You know, the best way to enjoy the episode is to watch the movie with us, so while you're at our website, click our Amazon links to get your copy of the movie. If you go to Amazon from our site, you can buy anything on Amazon, and they will give us a few copper pieces to keep our show going. Our music is by Maggie Sansone and is used with permission. You can find this music and much more at maggiesmusic.com. Please join us again next episode.